Oh my goodness, Justin Hayward with the Moody Blues, 54 years after Go Now introduced you to the world. A belated congratulations to you and your bandmates for being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame finally last year.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it meant a lot to the Moody Blues fans, and I'm glad Denny was there, Mike was there. Mm-hmm. Sadly, Ray had died only a few weeks before, but I think... if it means anything at all, he knew that we'd been inducted before he passed.
So, yes.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, for the Moody Blues fans, it was just great.
Well, and you famously said that if you didn't already know, we're just a bunch of British guys, and it's quite hard explaining the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame over the other side of the Atlantic. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yes. There is a, well, the English or the British, should I say British? I always think of myself as English. But the English are always got that thing. Why should they have their Rock and Roll of Fame? You know, how dare they?
Yeah. Anybody hear of the British invasion? There was that, right?
Yes. I mean, well, also, it's not just the British invasion. It's people like Cliff Richard and the mm-hmm. Shadows, and even Johnny Halliday, you know, for the French. And I think maybe they did ask me that at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year. Who do you think should be there? And I said, well, you should start with Cliff and the Shadows, because really for all the... You know, a tourist who visits Cleveland and go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame from the UK or from Europe, they must think, why aren't there anybody, you know, it's okay to have bands like us who've had success in America, but it's still devoid of people who are really huge in France, Germany, and Britain, and Holland, yeah, and Italy. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if they heard you. Let's hope so.
I said so.
Right?
I said so, Kat.
You said so. They asked you and you told them.
Yeah.
We are so excited to have you with, and you're all the way in concert the 27th of August here in the Folsom region, the Harris Center for the Arts. Moody Blues songs, deep cuts, other solo material. What can folks hope to hear? I'm so excited about this.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, I try to do things that span all of these last 52, 53 years, and quite a few things that I've never done on stage before, deeper sort of Moody Blues cuts. I get to do Forever Autumn, which is nice, which was a hit for me personally, and I was in that stage show as well for a few years, and so that was nice, but, you know, I think I'm doing these songs as I made my original demos of most of them, and I'm with three other wonderful musicians who it's just a joy to be with, an absolute joy, and I'm very lucky to have them with me. It really is. We're going back to the UK after this tour, and it's going to be a big thrill for us. I hope there's something there for everybody.
I can imagine.
You know, in the set list, I think so.
I read where you're bringing your songwriting guitars from home on the road. How will that be different from your other guitars? It's so interesting.
Well, in so much as that the way I've always written is that with the guitar, Picasso said inspiration has to find you working. And I find that if I go into my music room and pick up a certain guitar and really work with that guitar for a couple of hours, something will come out. And something about that has the color and the personality of that particular instrument. So I thought on this tour, then it was the nice and kind of honest thing to do to bring some of these guitars out, so that they do sound exactly the same as the recorded version. And yes, that's why it's a lovely show for me, because, you know, before, I loved every moment of the Moody's, but it was so loud, you know, two drummers. And yet the records weren't mixed like that, you know, with that kind of loudness or drums up front or all electric guitars. But so it's a pleasure really for me to do this show like this and to be able to hear every nuance and to work with three young people who love the music as well.
Well, let's talk about the young people. What is it like to go and play in shows with, I feel like this is with the Moody Blues or other music from that era, your thoughts on the wave of younger fans? Either we parents did our job and introduced the kids to the music, but there's a whole wave of younger people appreciating your generation of music, and I think it's fantastic. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, and that's really wonderful. It seems to, whether it moves on, I don't know. You know, whether it moves on through the decades. It's me personally. If I could only have one decade of music, I'd probably choose the 80s.
Why?
That was a wonderful time. Well, you know, it was just a great time of discovery, and I started writing on keyboards then. But also the records are, you know, people like the Pet Shop Boys and Human League and all of those. I just loved all of those things. And Wham as well, and Georgia. It was, and Michael. It was just great. But I just loved it. But I think we always have to remember that I never get drawn into that argument about the music of today not being as good, you know, because young people will be falling in love now to the songs that they're listening to now, that mean a lot to them now. And that music will stay with them forever, all through their life. Music makes a great impression on you when you're young. And thankfully, that's probably why I'm still being asked to do gigs, Kat. People like the music
it's
that
still
I did
there.
When I was young, and so there's quite a few people of my own age there.
Well, let's talk about how young, the moment that you maybe wanted to be a musician. I read that you got your first guitar when you were 10 and you hustled some kids at school to get a group together. What does a band of 10-year-olds sound like, please, sir?
Well, it was, I think we did, we managed to make a demo. One of the parents.
Really?
Got it. Yeah, we made a demo of, one of the parents had a tape recorder. And they got it. They got it quite professionally pressed. And I think we did Charlie Brown, or something like that. Charlie Brown, he's a clown.
Right.
We had no idea what we were talking about.
But
that's
then, awesome.
You know, the world changed for me when I heard Buddy Holly. Oh. Then everything kind of focused.
That was
yeah.
It.
But I was in groups ever since I went to secondary school. In England, you know, you leave one school at 11 and then you go into the secondary school. I was in a prep school and then a secondary school, a high school. And then from that moment on, things really changed for me. I was in groups all of the time and earning decent money as a semi-pro musician. Because I was lucky, in Swindon, my hometown, there was a very vibrant live music scene. And I think there still is, yeah. But very lucky. I'm sure there is around your way too. Young musicians, they need a place to play.
It's a very exciting time actually here in Northern California for young artists, even here in the Sacramento area. So that's it's a lot of fun. So where was that moment? Maybe when you heard the Moody Blues on the radio, when did you know that this was going to be something?
The band was actually started in Birmingham, not a place I'm from. I'm from the West Country of England, down south. But it was started by kind of some money men putting the band together. But it was a cover band. And it was only when a couple of guys left after about a year or so that Mike Pinder called me and asked me. And he was writing songs and I was writing songs. And I was just lousy at kind of rhythm and blues. So my purpose was trying to get my own songs done. And so we did okay with our own songs, and we were still doing some cover versions just to get some work. But then in early 1967, we ended up in Cabaret, and it was just terrible. And we decided one night just to do it. You know, I said to the other guys, you know, you really got to write too. And everybody wanted to and express themselves. So we got lucky. We were asked to do asked by Decca to do an album to demonstrate Stereo, which was which ended up being called Days of Future Past. And on that was Nights in White Satin and Tuesday Afternoon. And but still, it wasn't. It was still a kind of, I won't say cult, but it was a kind of an underground thing. And it wasn't until maybe 1972 that I think we realized that we'd made it. We were finally top of the bill. We were everyone's support band in the late 60s. You know, it wasn't until, I think,
the next decade,
71 or 72, where we started topping the bill of shows.
Well, fast forward to 2019. Do you ever, sir, get tired of singing Nights in White Satin, Tuesday Afternoon, Your Wildest Dreams, the things that we know by heart and demand of you when you play?
No, I don't, because the audience is different every night. And the audience, I mean, that's why there's such a huge difference between, otherwise it'd just be like a sound check. But the audience brings that magic into the room. That's absolutely true. There's one thing I've learned over the years. The audience brings a magic to it, of their expectations of a song, what their song means, what a song means to them. And to see people move closer together, you know, during nights. And sometimes these songs express things. I mean, I wrote them for myself and just about people in my own life. But it's clear that some of them resonate. Of course they do.
Very deeply.
We all have the same kind of experiences and loved and lost and loved again and lost again, maybe. And we should always latch on to it, whether male or female, you know, we should latch on to other girls or other boys that we think we can love, you know, not in a personal, you know, not in a living together way, but just that there's people that you know that are very precious, and so it resonates through a room, and that's a very powerful kind of magic somehow.
You speak as...
No, I never get tired of that, no.
That's great to hear. By the way, you speak as beautifully as you write. I mean, just the things you said just then were just so poetic and beautiful. So there. Ambitions that you still have left to fill. You play with the Moody Blues. You have solo. You're still writing. You've got a blues cruise coming up next year. Anything still on your list, Justin?
I think I've still got to read my way through the early 20th century English writers.
Oh, my.
I'm obsessed with, yes. And, you know, I've done Iris Murdoch, Elizabeth Bowen, and Barbara Pym, but I've still got a few to go.
You'll be around for another 30, 40 years, I'm thinking, if you're going to plow through all of them.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you for stopping on the 27th in our part of the world, Justin Hayward. We are so excited to have you with your All the Way In concert at the Harris Center for the Arts in Folsom. And thank you for the memories. Thank you for the beautiful music. And good luck with those books. My goodness.
Thank you, Kat. My pleasure. Lots of love to you and to everyone there. Look forward to seeing everybody.
Thank you, and safe travels.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.